Hey, Bat Family, it's Inkiru here. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If this is your first time listening, thank you so much and welcome to the Bat Family. If you're a returning listener, you know I love you dearly and I appreciate your ongoing support. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform as well as on our YouTube. It's free. And if you'd like to support our podcast financially with a one-time or monthly contribution of a dollar or more, please visit anchor.fm/BLDG Africa's Future/support. You can also find more details about that and more in our show notes or by following our Instagram page at Building Africa's Future, BUILDING Africa's Future. As usual, I invite you to join the conversation, and you can start by sharing this episode and our podcast with anyone that you think might enjoy it. Thank you so much once again, and happy listening. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Conversations from the Diaspora, a Building Africa's Future podcast. And as usual, I'm your host, your sister, and your friend, Inkiru. And I'm joined today with a special guest. Her name is Dr. Jite Lark. She created the Embody program at the height of the COVID pandemic as part of her commitment to living a healthy lifestyle and supporting women to do the same. Her goal is to change the narrative about superfoods in Africa, which led to her starting C4A, which is Change for Africa Superfoods, to provide natural ways for people to attain wellness with a diversity of food on the continent of Africa. In addition to that, she works currently with the NYC Department of Education within equity and access, supporting teachers and students, and has a background in culturally relevant responsiveness in STEM. So, Dr. Lark, if you could just please say hello to our listeners.
Hi, listeners. I'm so excited to be here chatting with Inkiru. I'm excited. Can't wait to dig in.
Yes, thank you once again for being here with us today. And just before we discuss the topics at hand, I would love to kind of hear a little bit more about your African diaspora experience as it relates to navigating new cultures and, you know, while maintaining your own. And if you could also maybe share a little bit about how those experiences either translate or influence your work today and some other personal projects that you're a part of.
Okay, so I'll take the first part, which is my diaspora experience. I think for me, having come here as an adult, in my late 20s, having worked and had some professional experiences, the biggest challenge was adapting ways of the Western ways without compromising who I was. And by that, I mean, here I am, a grown woman and set somewhat in my ways, and I'm here hearing that the way I pronounce certain words are different. I speak English well for, you know, an immigrant. Like, oh my goodness, what is it? You know, like, what's happening over here? And what do you mean, you know? So I struggled a little bit because I didn't understand, first of all, where that was coming from, why that was even an issue, and what was required of me to fit in and not be told that my words or my spelling or the way I pronounce certain things are not the norm. And, you know, just hearing, oh, you have an accent. I'm like, everyone has an accent. Maybe I have an accent that's not the norm here, but even you have an accent. You know, so those were the biggest things, and just what to do with them, because I can't change who I am. I'm set in certain ways. This is the way I spell, this is the way I talk, you know, so.
Right.
I mean, other than that, the transition was what it was. But I just feel like that part really challenged me and frustrated me at the same time. Mm. I did want to develop myself better, especially I'm speaking around when I started to pursue further education, my first graduate degree. Mm. I think that's where it really, really came up, because I thought it would be seamless, and I didn't expect that I'd be dealing with conversations like that, or having conversations like that where I'm challenged on the way I spell things. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm a grown woman. I've worked. Why is this so? Yeah, that was kind of where I feel like I had the biggest eye-opening experience.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I know for me, you know, as the podcast is centered about, you know, the experiences of, you know, the African diaspora, primarily from the millennial perspective. And, you know, it's always interesting for me to kind of hear each person's kind of unique diaspora experience. Like for me, I came here as a child and, you know, so I pretty much grew up here. So I know my experience is different from you coming as an adult. So I always love to kind of see how everyone kind of views the world differently, and how those things shape, you know, how you interact with the people around you, and just in general, how you see the world. I know when we were discussing previously, you had mentioned, you know, the diaspora experience in North America was drastically different from that of Europe, or, you know, UK specifically. I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit more about that.
I think, yeah, because in comparison to the UK and England in particular, the number of Nigerians in particular, and I'll say Africans,
right,
you know, it doesn't compare. Being in, even when I visit London, it's almost like being in Nigeria, especially Lagos. So it's easier in a sense to just be. And so coming here or coming back here, it's like, okay, there are not as many Nigerians, there are not as many Africans. And then you're now this different person.
Mm.
So it's, I keep shifting. I'm vacillating between being one of many and right, one of a few, you know.
Mm.
And I think also too about how sometimes we're viewed as a monolithic group.
Exactly.
How that is very, very not the case, especially here again, where I could be in a room full of Black people and mm-hmm. I'm the only continental African. And we have
right.
People from, we have Black Americans, we have Blacks from the Caribbean islands, and mm-hmm. how even within that group, different, but in the no, I won't say, but however, when I visit the UK, mm-hmm. it's like everyone's kind of the same in a sense, so it's interesting, you know, and it's different. I also think another thing is the diversity in the UK. You have, at least from my experience, of course, all of this is from my experience,
mm-hmm.
I'm speaking from me only. From an eye perspective,
right?
There's more integration in the sense of having, living in neighborhoods, visiting with friends,
mm-hmm.
visiting with my family, with white neighbors, neighbors from different parts of Europe. Whereas here, you're almost segregated in a sense. For example, before I moved to where I am currently,
mm-hmm.
the neighborhood was primarily all Black. And, you know, it's segregated. So that alone sort of calls on you to move differently. I don't know that, if you understand. I mean, I'm still moving, but it's different. It's different when you're around, when you live around a more diverse population,
right,
as opposed to when you live around people who are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also something that was quite interesting and was a bit of a contrast to my my European experience, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. So I know you did your, you know, your doctoral research in culturally relevant responsiveness in STEM. If you can just kind of talk to us a little bit more about that, like what does that mean? How does that look like? And how does it work in practice, like with your, you know, your experience in working in the classroom and working to support educators in that field?
Well, the reason that I even chose that as a research topic was because of my own experiences as a graduate student. So even at that level, I found that the instruction, the curriculum was very white. It was steeped in whiteness. And, you know, again, another shock. I'm thinking a graduate degree, master's program, you know, I'm okay, but I wasn't okay. There were times where even during the program, I was, you know, I felt very alone, I was one of maybe a handful of Black students, and I think one of maybe 5 or 6 female students. So when I started the program, I didn't have any particular, nothing stood out to me as an area to really go in depth. But when I began to work with my supervisor and sort of reflect on my own experience, I was like, you know what? I think what I need, what is calling me, is something that is going to change the learning experience that I'm having. If I, at this age, at this level, I'm still feeling so, you know, I feel like this, then I can't imagine what the 16, 15 year olds, or even what K-12, what an experience, or what K-12 students are experiencing, what type of learning experiences Black and brown students are feeling. Because it was very dry, it was very hegemonic, it was very white-centered.
Right.
The delivery, the instruction did not take into, but I mean, obviously I navigated it as an adult. I used all the resources, but that sort of got me thinking, if I'm 6, I don't even know that I can help myself, but I'm receiving what is given to me. I don't have the tools, I don't have the maturity, I don't have anything to navigate. So that's kind of what led me to choosing culturally relevant responsive teaching as my, in STEM, because I had a science background. But mostly it was to find ways to engage our students using their culture, using their ethnicities, using their backgrounds, their languages to hook them into learning, to break away from the Eurocentric way of learning. And that's kind of where that's why that became what I decided to.
Thanks. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think that's extremely important, as you mentioned, especially for Black and brown students who attend schools that are mostly kind of Eurocentric in the approach, and as you had mentioned. So I love that you were really intentional about trying to make their learning more applicable to their daily lives and make them actually see themselves within, you know, the subject matter, because that's something that really helps to motivate them, especially in this field of STEM. As we all know, this is a field that we need more, you know, more of us.
Yes, underrepresentation.
Oh yeah. So I think that's great. You know, the work that you have done and what you are still doing. And I would love to kind of like switch gears a little bit, because I know that, you know, education, obviously you work in education, and I know that you had mentioned, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic or at the height of the pandemic, you started the Embody program, which I know for many of us, you know, even with the podcast, at the pandemic kind of brought out lots of things from us, because obviously we were at home, we had more time to kind of reflect
to
on
ponder.
Exactly. And I think for you, this is probably something that you have always had a passion to do, but, you know, again, because of work, because of other responsibilities, you probably weren't able to focus on it in the same way. So if you can just kind of tell us a little bit more about how the Embody program came to be, what are some challenges you might have been having at that time that kind of led to you wanting to start it, and, you know, if you can just share with us a little bit more about why that was important to you.
Sure. Well, at the onset, like you said, having nowhere to go and nothing to do, in a sense, you begin to look internally, you begin to think about life, mortality, especially because of all that was going on. And, you know, as I started to just think about where I wanted to be health-wise, and I realized that I because of work, especially since I started the new position, I had actually put on quite a bit of weight. I'd never really struggled with weight per se, but I certainly had never been at that size. And I was like, you know what, this is, I have all this time, I need to get back to where I really feel my best. Yeah. And so I started to work out more, started to take more care with what I was eating. But what really, really, when it really came together was when I realized that even though I was doing what I had always been doing, I wasn't shifting things. And I still sort of stayed the same. I was yo-yoing between a certain number. So I realized that as I got older, obviously, I couldn't just go to the same tactics that had worked in the past, and that there was a little bit more that was required of me at this time. And just having really sitting with myself, thinking about my mind and my mindset, and I also actually started coaching, I realized that what the missing link, I say the vital missing link, which is what I think distinguishes the program from any other weight loss program, is the mindset. And so when my mindset shifted and changed beyond just that number and the scale, because that was what spurred me, obviously, wanting to be a certain size. But within that was the discovery of the why I wanted to even be that particular size. And I realized that it wasn't really, while I value the numerical wins, because we all want to look good.
You're right.
What really came about was that I needed a stronger reason to be able to sustain and get to where I really wanted to be. And just having taken time to really dig deeper than what was obvious, meaning being a certain size, I realized that what had been the driving force behind everything that I'd done as it relates to health and wellness was my mother, watching her deal with two types of cancers, watching other females close to me struggle. And I was like, you know what, this is the reason why I want to get better. But beyond me, this is the reason why I want to share what I've realized and what I know to be true, is that when you have the right mindset and you're approaching your wellness, your fitness with the right mindset, there's nothing that you cannot do. There's no size, there's no way of being that you can't attain. And that's kind of how it came about. So obviously when my mindset shifted, when I allowed myself to really sit in the feelings of discomfort around what was driving me, which was just watching my mother struggle and struggle with her health, watching other Black women too, highest rate of obesity, Black women, cancer, heart issues, like we're at the top of the list for all the stress-related diseases. And, you know, just looking around, everybody's, not everybody, but quite a number of us are struggling with so many health-related issues and just maintaining wellness and fitness. Mostly not because of lack of wanting to do better, but because of that whole burden of being the matriarch of your home, you know what I mean?
Right.
That superwoman thing that I think we can all relate to as a Black woman. You're doing everything, you're putting yourself back. So anyways, to cut a long story short, when I shifted my mindset, when I really, really sat with the whys and I dug deep and I really realized why I was doing it, I was able to lose the weight. I was able to get to the best, I say, best physical shape, but mentally too, which is why I say it's best, because not just was it a number on the scale, my mind, I felt strong, I felt empowered, my whole mindset shifted. And so I wanted to share this. I went with a teacher who I worked with when I was in the classroom, and she also experienced the same success. I think she lost almost over 30 pounds, almost 40 pounds, and she was like, you know, this is the first time I'm happy to not be the fattest person in the room. I mean, that was like, wow. And then I went on to work with other ladies who also achieved success. And so it went on and on. And it became this thing that, you know, I'm like, I'm super excited. I really want to reach out. I want to connect with ladies who tried, who haven't quite been able to attain and maintain, more importantly. Work with them. Within that too was my discovery of Moringa and Baobab superfood powders, as I call them, the dynamic duo, because I was also running. I used to run marathons a lot, and one of the things that helped me with my post-race recovery was using them. At the time it was in my smoothies, but I've since evolved where I use them with anything.
Okay.
When I started, that was what I used, and because I had, again, such success with them, I wanted to have them consistently. I reached out to, I did a little bit of research and found out that we actually have them on the continent of Africa. And I was like, wow, you know what, this could be a win-win. I would be helping the continent, I'd be changing the narrative.
Right.
That we have everything. And even with that discovery, there's everything on the continent of Africa. Every single thing.
It's true.
So my commitment too was to reach out to farms that were 80% owned or farmed by women. And because I value female entrepreneurship, being a female entrepreneur. And I imported the products. And so, yeah, another business was birthed within the other business.
Nice. I love that. Yeah, I mean, I know it's all about women empowerment and, you know, by extension, empowering families, because obviously we know that women, you know, we do a lot when it comes to taking care of our homes and our...
Can I say we do everything?
Yes, we do everything.
Without bashing anyone.
Right. Yes, we do everything. And one thing that I really wanted to bring up, because I know, you know, again, obviously speaking from a cultural context, for many people, you know, back home, you know, Africa, their view of people who are bigger, I don't know if this perspective has changed, you know, as people are more educated, but I know in the past, you know, people who have more weight to them are seen to be those who are wealthy and those who are doing well in life. From your research and from your experience, would you say that this thinking has changed, or is it more or less still the same?
I think it's changing.
Okay.
I think it is. I think with the rising of so many... I think COVID did a lot of things.
Yeah, it did.
And not all, well, I won't say it did good things, but some positives came out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things was everyone began to look at where they were in terms of their health and other areas, but their health as well, because obviously it affected health.
Right.
Even before that, but I feel like in the last 2 years up till now, folks are like, you know, if being this size is not serving me, then meaning if it's not going to keep me alive longer, then it's not serving me.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone's looking at being overweight as a sign of affluence. You're looking at it as a sign of being more susceptible to diseases and illnesses. So it's changing. It definitely is.
Right. And that's... And that's something that, you know, I talk about quite often. You know, my husband and I, we actually talked about this very recently. There's like obviously a rise of, you know, cancer. We're seeing it like all over, even back home, which, you know, I would say, of course, I don't know a lot about that, but I would say that the numbers are probably not as bad as here, only because of, you know, a lot of the other things that we have here that they don't back home. But of course, you can speak to that a little bit more, you know, based on your research and everything. But could you maybe speak a little bit more about, I know you mentioned the superfoods, and, you know, just to kind of go back to the point about us thinking about health differently because of the pandemic. I know, you know, we were watching those videos in the beginning of the pandemic, you know, boiled ginger, boiled turkey, and do all these
things. People were going crazy. Yeah, garlic, all sorts of concoctions.
Exactly. And I mean, even till now, I still drink that, like, as part of my, I would say weekly, or, you know, just to kind of maintain health for myself. I mean, I like the way it tastes and it makes me feel good about I haven't been sick or anything. But if you can just kind of talk a little bit more about the superfoods and I love the fact that you were intentional about, you know, working with female farmers and supporting women-owned businesses back home, because I think that's definitely an area where there's a lot of support that is needed, and especially as it relates to the superfoods and just health in general. Because I think for many of us, for those who are back home, there's always this idea or thinking or understanding that anything from abroad is just automatically better. So I love the fact that you said that we have everything that we need, you know, on the continent of Africa. It's just about maybe educating people or bringing people back to that, if you want to call it, ancestral knowledge of some of these things. So if you can maybe speak a little bit more about, you know, your discovery of, well, first of all, if you can talk a little bit more about what exactly is a superfood from your research, and also if you can tell us a little bit more about, you know, just how you source those superfoods, or, you know, just a little bit more about that process.
So a superfood is essentially any food that has more than the average amount of nutrients in them. Most foods, and when I say foods, I just want to clarify, I mean like real foods, not processed foods, foods that are grown, real, like living foods. Mm. And so they're foods that have more than the above amount of nutrients in them. And in this case, I mean, there are a slew of superfoods. Blueberries are superfoods, like they range, there's a whole gamut of it. But in particular, I'm talking about moringa and baobab because they, even individually but combined, they are extraordinary in the amount of nutrients, the essential vitamins, the minerals that they have. And moringa is an awesome source of proteins. It has, I think, 6 complete proteins. It helps with muscle recovery. It helps with hair. I mean, it's like this slew of nutritional benefits. Baobab is the same. It's from the baobab tree, which has been around forever. In fact, one of the farmers that I get it from, get the baobab powder from or source from, said that they actually know owner to the trees, the baobab trees, because they grow for years and years and years before you can even begin to process their fruits. And processing may just, in this case, means naturally drying and dehydrating them. So that's what they are. And then the moringa is from the moringa tree. Mm. Of course, the leaf that's been naturally dried, naturally dehydrated, slew of vitamins, slew of essential minerals. And again, what it just means is that what you would get from, say, your centrum or your vitamin A, B, C, D, or the combination of that is what you'd be getting. But this time, without the capsules,
right,
actually dry, naturally dehydrated, free of any preservatives, free of any chemicals, free of anything. Just literally what you get is what it is. Like you get the, and so they're more easily absorbed into the bloodstream. They're more diverse, obviously, because you can use them with anything. As I mentioned earlier, I started off using them in my smoothie, but now I just encourage anyone to integrate them into your meals. And so where you'd be taking the centrum, if you wanted an all-in-one multivitamin, or like me, prior to finding them, I had B, I had C, I had about 6 different things. Yeah, I don't anymore because I have these sources and, you know, there's no need. And I don't have to, my body doesn't have to break down the capsules. They absorb more easily into the bloodstream. So that's what a superfood is, a food that has more nutrients. I forgot your second point or question.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Just pretty much how people back home can maybe get out of the thinking of anything that is from abroad.
Oh, yes. So we have to stop glorifying, we have to stop glorifying Western things. And I think it's happening. I believe it is. There's still a lot that we have to do, because even when I tell you about even my experience with the powders, I'm bringing them here and I'm taking them back and then they become a thing because they're coming from here.
Oh man.
So I know it's crazy. But my dad, I remember my dad saying to me, "What do you mean you're selling moringa? Moringa is here, is there?" And he was pointing to all the moringa trees. I'm like, "I know, but the crazy thing is, Nobody's listening. When I bring them back from New York and I bring them to Lagos, then it's a thing. So, yeah. Lots of education, but it's much more nuanced, obviously. It goes back to colonial things, right. The whiteness and all of that. So we're still working through that slowly but surely. But even amongst my friends, I'm not gonna mention any names, but like Moringa. Oh wow, I'm like, you have Moringa behind here. I'm like, they're like, wow, baobab is all here. But almost, I want to say, out of 10 people, maybe only 2 had heard of baobab in Lagos, in Nigeria.
Wow.
Yes. And so I do have friends and people that I know who are not as aware as they should be of the abundance of natural goodness that is there, you know. So one of my, in addition to, of course, supporting the agricultural progression of women farmers, is to bring awareness, or in order to do that, I should say, is to bring awareness to more about the goodness that is there already, the plethora of resources that we have at our disposal, and really just begin to shift our mindsets of Western solutions to our problems.
Right.
Look more locally. I mean, I say that you can't look to the people who put you in this predicament to solve the predicament that you're in. And this is more than just the agricultural piece.
Exactly.
I think with what the African nations are dealing with, a lot of it is steeped in the colonial mindsets that we haven't all outgrown, and
right.
we have to solve our problems. We need to stop looking to the West. And part of that too is even just looking around at the things that are available and leveraging those things and using them to help in all the ways, any way possible. Help our economy, help agriculturally, help education. We have the brains, we have the manpower, we're the ones all over the world doing all these things anyway. So why can't we help ourselves? Why can't we do what we know to do for our own countries? Why are we still looking for help when we have all that we need?
Exactly. And I think you bring up so many important points, because, again, obviously we can relate because it's a very culturally specific, conversation. I know even when, let's say, for example, someone is traveling back home, you always have someone who is back home who's like, oh, please, make sure you send home some medicine for us, because what we have here is not the authentic one, which, of course, that's a different conversation. But I would love to kind of, just briefly talk about how people can, take care of themselves in a healthy way. And what I mean by that is, as we mentioned, like some of these more natural solutions, like natural herbs and natural supplements, or foods that are actually rich, because I know, and there's always like that weird line where people are afraid to maybe get too deep into herbs and other natural things, because they somehow, unfortunately, always equate it with I can't think of the term right now. I
don't want primitive practices, and
Like they think of it as, okay, maybe you're going to like an herbalist or some other kind of, like, there's always some negative,
connotation to.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate.
It is.
I don't know if there's any, I know religion obviously has a very big role to play as it relates to a lot of these things, because this is a topic I've been interested in, like just traditional medicine in general. I feel like I've always felt viewed that natural medicine is the way to go. And I know that you brought this up earlier when we were chatting, behind the scenes, like the importance of obviously finding a balance between conventional medicine when it's necessary, and then you know, I guess in your day-to-day life, taking care of yourself with like the natural things. But I don't know if you can maybe speak to that just a little bit, how people can maybe come out of that mindset of thinking that taking things back to those traditional ways or natural ways does not equate any type of, you know, deeply spiritual or negative. I don't know. I don't really know how to phrase that question.
I know what you mean. It's a bit murky if you really want to be specific. So we'll just talk about it loosely.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think personally, I think that we should always be looking to be on the preventive side of things as opposed to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think if your mindset is set to always try to the best of your ability to live a healthy lifestyle, then if ever there's a need to cure something or treat something, then, you know, you do what you do.
Yes.
But for the most part, if we're dedicated to living a natural lifestyle, you will, using the things that are around you, will be a no-brainer. There'll be no, you won't ascribe anything to anything. Like, oh, you're eating well, you're using the things around you. Then that is just what it is. I think it's when we try to be and do, that's when we run into issues, you know?
Right.
Because I think when I was in Nigeria, I don't even think, I just ate what was there. My snacks were bolly, grilled plantain, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Those were the things. Like, it was all, that was just it. But then when you begin to have influences from the West,
exactly,
you go, you come, and suddenly it's like, oh, you want this, you feel like this, your eating takes on the whole. That's when that's when we begin to see all some of these issues.
Yeah, right. That's
and,
true.
And this was highlighted, I don't know if I can say this, but this was really highlighted during the COVID, where we found that the least affected or impacted population were those who were not as economically advantaged as others. They always sourced locally, like their foods were, and at the end of the day, they actually did fed better, I would say.
Right.
I know it's a bit, I mean, if it's, I don't know, controversial, I know, but
yeah.
I'm just saying that the folks who were out there in the sun selling tomatoes, not eating all these processed foods, even minimally processed foods, actually did better. And so my point is, when you're using the things that are local, when your life is reflective of where you are, it has, as I've seen, it has actually been beneficial.
Yeah.
It's when we ascribe to all these other ways of being, when we're thinking eating things in cans and things that come from all these places, elevate you to a different level, is when you run into trouble.
Exactly.
I leave it like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's definitely something to say about having fresh food and, you know, access to things that you grew it yourself, or you know where it was sourced from, versus created somewhere in a factory or manufactured some far, far away place. So yeah, definitely. I agree with you. Now, I guess to change gears a little bit, I would love to know how you make some of these connections with, you know, the women, you know, farmers and business owners. Like, how do you make those connections? How do you know who to, you know, source with, or make, you know, if you can talk to that experience of, or, you know, how you are able to, I guess, connect with these people. Do you travel? I mean, of course, I'm assuming you would travel often, but how do those conversations start?
Well, originally, of course, because I had no idea, I reached out to, I had a coach who exposed me to the different suppliers.
Okay.
And so I had access to them and I decided to reach out and so followed up with those who reached out, those who I connected with, then I further developed relationships and even met a couple of them. But the initial thing was through the business coach, but I've since then fostered my own connections with people who know people,
right,
who are trying to do similar things,
mm-hmm,
or who are even doing the same thing and who want to expand their markets into the US in particular. Mm-hmm. So I'm making those types of connections. But at the forefront of it is woman-owned,
right,
woman-farmed. There must be women because they are the agricultural backbone.
Right. So. Love that. Love that.
Now, and once you start, you know, momentum brings clarity and brings, mm-hmm, connections. And also, as you start, you just start to meet people who have the same interests or similar interests or who know people, you know. So it just sort of takes a life of its own. But the initial contact was through, or the initial process was through a business coach, an African business coach in particular.
Nice. Nice. I love that. That's good. I mean, I love to see, you know, those connections being made and, you know, supporting people at, you know, on the continent and here in the diaspora. I love seeing those, you know, conversations being had. And just as we are about to round up, I would love to, I know you, you know, unfortunately, you know, your mom passed of cancer. And I know that's something that, you know, inspired a lot of what you're doing, especially as it relates to healthy lifestyle and healthy thinking and everything like that. Now, if you could just maybe tell us, like, what do you envision for change for Africa and with the Embody program and everything else that you're doing? How would you say that, you know, your mom's, you know, everything that happened with your mom and with your dad, like, did this inspire this movement? Or were you, like, how did this really come to be? And what do you envision for Change for Africa?
Well, thank you for calling it a movement.
Love it.
Because it is, even though, yeah, it's small movement, but it's, yeah, my vision is that it will gain traction and become this big thing where,
right,
the impact and the influence is like, wow, you know. My personal goal, where I see it, I see the ladies, I see the products, I see Africa as being this super healthy continent,
yeah,
where we're tapping into what we have, where we're really, really developing our local resources, where we're living healthy, happy, fulfilled lifestyles. In particular, I want Black women to elevate themselves physically. We've attained successes in almost every sphere of life, but for some reason, many of us are still struggling with the personal care. And so I think one of the things that I want to really, really emphasize, and the work that I really want to do, is to shift that mindset into putting self first,
right,
and not looking to take care of yourself when it's too late, or when it's dire or absolutely necessary, when it becomes a thing.
Right.
I'm tired of people saying, oh, I have to do this now, later. I'm like, later, you can barely move. You're struggling. If you don't have health, you don't have wealth. There's no
exactly.
Later. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is frequent from women and frequently said by Black women.
We
have to put ourselves first. Putting yourself first is not being selfish. It's
exactly.
Actually being very, very selfless, because if you're not well and you're not in a position to, you can't help anyone.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of like the vision where I'm spreading this awareness.
Yeah.
I'm reiterating the awareness. Self-care is healthcare.
Exactly. Oh, I love that. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Jita, as we're kind of rounding up, how can people support, you know, what you're doing? How can they get involved? You know, can you just let us know, you know, what if a person would like to maybe partner with you or just maybe do what you're doing or support you as they kind of start their own thing, tell us how they can get connected with you.
Well, you can definitely email me at info@drjitalak.com and you can visit the website at changeforafrica.net. I'm definitely looking to educate more about the benefits of the superfoods and how switching from pills to powder is the way to go. So I'm open to collaborations, partnerships, and send me an email. We're on Instagram, Facebook, I'm everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you'll include the website and my email address. So that's definitely really, I'm on Instagram at GTLab. That's super easy. I respond to DMs. You can email me and support the ladies in Africa by purchasing the superfoods. Also, I just forgot to mention that for every pouch or every packet that's sold, we're planting seedlings in several countries, not just in Africa, actually around the world. That's my commitment to the earth and what we're doing to it.
I love that. I love that. That's beautiful. Now, Dr. Jita, I'll give you a few seconds just to kind of say whatever you want to say to our listeners, just maybe one line of encouragement or anything like that that you would like to share.
Start where you are. Start where you are. Self-care is healthcare, as I said. Mm. It doesn't have to be this big, elaborate thing. Wherever you are is wherever you are. If it's committing to working out once a week, going for that walk 15 minutes every day, just eating less processed foods, moving more. Our bodies were designed to move. So I think the biggest thing I'll say is move more and eat less processed foods. But definitely put yourself at the center of everything. If you don't have health, you cannot do anything, okay? Nothing matters.
It's true. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jita. Thank you all once again for tuning in. This is Conversations from the Diaspora. And until next time, be well.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hey, Bat family. Thank you so much once again for tuning in to today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed our conversation today. I would love to know your thoughts and any feedback that you may have on this particular episode, this particular topic. Please feel free to leave us a voice message, or you can comment on our promo image. You can find us on our Instagram at Building Africa's Future. Please go to the links in the bio to find out about how you can purchase our new merchandise. We do have new shirts available for $25 all the way up to $30. We would love for your continued support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And as usual, I hope that you stay well. Thanks, Bat Family.